General aviation user fees. Has the DOT found a way to get the camel's nose in the tent without Congress? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Robert Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation deals in market-based solutions to the problems of transportation and a lot of other things in life. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
Glad to be here, Paul.
Bob, I was floored when I went through the recent notice of proposed rulemaking from the Department of Transportation to notice that the language appears to open the door for user fees on general aviation. And I guess I should draw a distinction here. I know that some airports around the country already charge landing fees, and in some cases, general aviation pilots run into this from place to place. But this would be the big airports. Well, the DOT expected it to affect, I think, the 14 largest or busiest airports in the nation,
right,
especially those that are constrained in their ability to expand. Tell us what the DOT proposed notice is all about. What's the basic goal of it?
The basic goal is to permit and encourage large congested airports to change the way they price runway access. Instead of the traditional system based solely on the weight of the plane, they would allow a two-part price that would partly be based on weight, but also partly would be based on essentially how congested the airport is, so that it would give a price incentive to shift travel away from the busiest periods, or to shift to an alternate airport. The attempt is to try to get the maximum use out of it. It would also provide an incentive for airlines to shift to larger planes during the busiest times of day, carrying the same number of people in a smaller total number of planes, and designed to get the maximum best use out of the limited, scarce runway capacity at airports like Kennedy and Newark.
Okay, now, this is making you look very prescient, because about a month ago,
there
was a press release from the Reason Foundation in which you wrote, "Congestion pricing is the most effective way to reduce air travel delays and congestion at New York area airports. The report systematically debunks the arguments that airlines try to use against congestion pricing and details exactly how airport pricing would impact each of the three major New York airports." Expand on that for us a little bit, Bob, because I know we've had this discussion a couple of months ago. I wondered why they didn't just auction slots off, because it seemed like the purest market-based solution. Tell us why congestion pricing is a better way to go on this.
Well, first of all, congestion pricing can be implemented practically by a snap of the fingers.
Okay.
It obviously it is constrained when airlines have long-term agreements that govern what they're charged. It is constrained by that. But as an auction system takes a long time to design, and if you try to auction off all the existing slots, the airlines will go to court and say, "Wait a minute, we own those. We have a control, a historic property right in the slots that we're now serving." DOT says that's completely wrong. They've always maintained that there's no property right in slots, but you're inviting huge, complex litigation in doing that, and putting in where you only auction surplus slots that could become available if an airline pulls out of a market, or if new technology adds two more operations per hour, doesn't do a thing to reduce congestion, or has hardly any effect. So you can get the full-fledged market-based allocation quickly and speedily by putting in what we call congestion pricing, or runway access charges that vary with the level of congestion or demand.
All right. Now, it's going to take some time, though, isn't it, to calibrate this system as well?
Yes, yes. And what we propose, Reason Foundation released a 78-page report in December on how this could be done for the three New York area major airports. And we suggested a system in which the airport authority would put out a proposed price schedule based on how long the departure queues are at every hour of the day, and let the airlines then figure out what they would do to tweak their schedules in response to that, and then report back to the airport, this is what we propose, and then the airport would be able to say, all right, how much does that reduce the congestion? And if it doesn't reduce it enough, they would revamp the proposed prices and send them back to the airlines, and they go through two or three rounds of this. This would be done maybe two or three times a year for each major schedule adjustment season. You know, they readjust schedules for the summer, they readjust them usually in the fall and winter, then again in the spring. So you'd have a process that would go on over several weeks prior to the schedules being finalized. And then, you know, you'd go for 3 or 4 months for that season, see how things worked, and learn all the while, how to tweak it and make it better the next time you go through a round like that.
Now, did it surprise you that after the dust settled from the collaboration that went on with the airlines late last year, that this popped up just a few days ago as kind of an add-on?
Well, it did surprise me because the initial reaction in December from the U.S. DOT was that although they had wanted to propose congestion pricing for the airports, the airlines were so unanimous against it, or almost unanimous, let's be clear, and the Port Authority, which owns and operates the three major airports, did not express any interest in contrast to in previous years having said a lot of interesting things in support of the idea. So the DOT just said, well, we're going to do the brute force approach of clamping down on the number of operations. We're going to put a ceiling on operations per hour at Kennedy and Newark, similar to what already exists at LaGuardia, and let the chips fall where they may. In our report, we recommended that they make a bigger push to try to persuade people that congestion pricing makes sense, and that one of the things they should do is to clarify the DOT's rates and charges policy to make it clear that congestion pricing is allowed, that it's not discriminatory, that it's something that should be an option that any airport could choose. And that's what they've just done.
The Department of Transportation has a notice of proposed rulemaking out for congestion pricing at airports, which came as kind of a surprise last week. We're talking about it with Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies with the Reason Foundation. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Robert Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We're talking today about a notice of proposed rulemaking that's running on its 45-day clock now at the Department of Transportation. And the proposal is to allow airports nationwide to charge landing fees, a new two-part landing fee, which includes one part the traditional weight-based fee and one part a per-time usage, which would affect general aviation aircraft and airliners alike. And it would be used primarily, as the DOT envisions it, at the busiest airports and especially the 14 airports identified nationwide as those most constrained in their future growth in terms of runway capacity. Bob, we've talked a lot about user fees in the past. I see this as a very interesting development because all the what we like to call the alphabet groups, which represent general aviation interests, have talked about not letting the camel's nose get in the tent. That's Phil Boyer's favorite term over at AOPA. Sure. This is a very interesting development to me because this is kind of an end run around Congress to kind of get this whole idea started. And I wonder, now that the congestion pricing is going to be based partly on weight and partly on just a per-time use, this will now affect lighter, smaller aircraft, a lot of business aircraft coming into the big airports.
Coming into the big airports, that's right. But as Phil Boyer and NBAA and others point out, there's a very small number of GA planes that go in and out of airports like Kennedy and LaGuardia and so forth. We've looked at the records and found there's about 18 a day, or 18 a day business jets at least, go into JFK, 21 a day at Newark, about 30 a day at LaGuardia. That is a trivial number, and so the GA groups are correct in saying that they're not a big factor. The point of this is, if they do want to use those airports, they ought to pay on the same basis as anyone else, because they're taking up a very valuable and scarce piece of runway at the time. If a Learjet lands, a 747 can't. And, so a few people on a Learjet are displacing maybe 400 people on a 747. And there's a big economic cost to the airport's productivity, to the regional economy, if 747s don't have enough space to land. On the other hand, the pricing approach says, no, we're not going to prohibit anybody. Anybody who's willing to pay the price still has access, and there definitely are maybe not Learjets, but Gulfstreams and Challengers that have very high-powered people on board who would be perfectly willing to pay that price if they want the convenience of landing at LaGuardia.
Now, up until now, the Department of Transportation points out that the system of charging based on weight has actually provided, if anything, an incentive for airlines to make a shift to more smaller planes. Is this going to be effective in guiding airline thinking into getting more people on bigger planes at longer intervals?
We think there's good evidence that it will. The evidence is of two kinds. Economists for 10 or 15 years have been doing increasingly sophisticated simulation modeling, including modeling that uses airline scheduling software to look at how they make decisions, and they really get it down to the pennies in terms of how profitable a flight is. And so the evidence from that, from the modeling, suggests that they will upgauge, meaning replacing 30-seat regional jets with maybe 75-seat regional jets, a lower frequency of them, but the same number of passengers in a smaller number of buckets, so to speak. The other evidence is that George Mason University and several others ran a whole strategic war game exercise in 2005 for LaGuardia, which they had airline scheduling people playing the role of airline decision makers, responding to a price system like what we've proposed. And sure enough, they not only shifted smaller planes out of peak hours, they also upgauged significantly, replacing small regional jets with larger regional jets, or large regional jets they replaced with things like MD-80s and A319s to serve the same number of people with a smaller number of planes and save a lot of money.
One of the big criticisms the airlines have leveled at this, or at least the ATA, the Air Transport Association, has leveled at this, is that all this does is add more cost to the system, and those costs are just going to get added to customer tickets. Now, looking at you across the table as a market-based guy, I have to shrug my shoulders and say, and your problem is?
Yes, right. But that's very misleading, though, because if you look at the kind of pricing that we proposed, which is based on the good modeling exercises, remember that the same, let's say, at rush hour at Kennedy, a $2,000 runway charge would apply to a 767 and a 35-seat regional jet. The relative price impact on the 767 would be about $2 per passenger of added cost, but for the little regional jet, it would be about $30 or $40 per passenger. Now, you better believe that's going to make a difference. It's going to make no difference in the marketability or the actual pricing of the 767 flight, but it's going to make a big difference. It's going to make that 30-seat regional flight probably unprofitable because there's enough price resistance to that big of an increase in ticket price.
But do you find it frustrating that in the American dialogue these days, there's this sense of entitlement? Like, if I want to fly at 8 a.m. out of Chicago O'Hare, I shouldn't pay any more than the person willing to fly at 4 a.m. Isn't that kind of what we have to fix?
We do have to fix that, and it's a basic unwillingness to accept principles of economics that we accept all the rest, you know, all over. You know, we understand that happy hours at bars and restaurants try to attract people in at the less busy times, and you don't get those same prices at the time when the place is packed and everybody wants to be there. We have discount airfares at off-peak times already. The airlines know how to do value pricing or congestion pricing. They just don't want the airports to get in on the game.
We've just come through the holiday season where department stores obviously play that game in a big way.
Absolutely. I mean, so the whole economy runs on this. There's just these isolated pockets where, for one reason or another, governments have not allowed market forces to operate. And it's we're paying a high price in things like congestion and delays because of not allowing the market prices to operate.
Bob, we touched on this a few minutes ago. AOPA has said that at the 10 busiest airports, general aviation represents only 3% of the volume at those airports. You had some writings recently about the burden that general aviation represents to TRACON facilities that floored me. If you can make the time, Bob, I'd like to have you back to talk about that.
I'd be happy to do that.
My guest has been Robert Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find out more at www.reason.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.